sacrificed your love for more of the night. I tried to put up a fight. Can't tie me down.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The Morning Rush, Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. This week, he's on vacation, and I'll be here Monday to Thursday because Friday is the holiday. It's Canada Day, which is, I realize, a tougher thing to say on radio than I've always struggled with that one, Canada Day.
Like saying it clearly, you mean?
Yeah, there's just too many vowels in
rolls
there
together.
It's an awkward phrase to say. I've always loved this holiday. I really do. I used to always try to, I mean, now it's young family and things are different, but I always tried to do either Parliament Hill was fun, did that a couple of times, but for me, Canada Day is the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
July 1st game. I love going to that. They bring out the absolutely massive flag at the Rogers Center. And I mean, I love baseball, so I love going to those. This year, it's going to be pretty different. You just, you know, dress a little kid up in red and go into the backyard. But it was interesting. I was thinking about Canada Day a lot yesterday because I was out walking my dog just through the neighborhood, just right up and down some streets. And we were going down some side streets just to avoid other dogs because my dog can be a nightmare at times. And he just barks a lot, and it's just embarrassing, right? I always make him sit, and he's not the most well-trained dog you've ever seen in your life. So sometimes it's just easier to go down some quieter streets and not deal with the insanity of on the main streets and near the dog park, and,
yeah,
right? So, but it was just interesting yesterday going through some of them that I hadn't been up in a while, and the Canadian flags are starting to come up, getting ready for Canada Day. And I was thinking of the last two Canada Days. Yeah, last year there seemed to be, among some people, and I didn't share that, but I don't think it's crazy to say this, there seemed to be some shame associated with Canada Day last year. There was a lot of things going on with bodies found at the residential schools, and all of that stuff. And so people who were on a certain side of the political spectrum had some kind of shame and weren't sure how to celebrate Canada Day last year. And this year, I'm seeing texts right now from a couple people coming in this morning because I talked about it earlier, about how ashamed they are of this country this year. And I don't think the Venn diagram has much in the middle between those two groups. Mm-hmm. I think they're very separate
reasons,
ideologues.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting that through both of those, if you just walk up the street and see normal, everyday people living their lives in the suburbs, the Canadian flags were up both years. And so I think we get too caught up sometimes in this, oh, this Canada Day is divisive this year. People aren't going to be celebrating. No, they are. There's fringe groups on each side of the political spectrum who have tried to make this day whatever they want for their own political ideology. This year it's, I hate Justin Trudeau, I hate the government, I hate vaccine mandates, I'm going to come wave an upside down flag on the hill on Canada Day. Last year it was sad, somber, politically correct crowd that was trying to cancel it. But through all of it was a vast majority of people who just recognized that there were some flaws in this country, and they were trying to celebrate that as well as what they love about it. And I saw a bunch of people wearing red and putting up flags last year and walking the dog yesterday in the neighborhood. Those same houses were still up with the flags. And so there's a lot of noise around this holiday, and there has been the last couple of years, but I really do believe that the vast majority of people are just very happy to live here, see what's going on. They love this country. They'll put a flag up on the balcony and use tie wraps or string or whatever it is, because not everyone has a flagpole, and they'll go out there and celebrate it. And so let's just kind of keep that in mind as we work our way through the week here, that it's not as bad as certain people were trying to make it sound last year and a certain other group are trying to make it sound this year. people do, I think, genuinely love to live here. I think we're lucky to live in this country, and I think people are still ready to celebrate. Now, people may not want to flock to the downtown core and just deal with the headache this year. I don't really know what to expect on that front. We'll get a security update at 9:30 this morning from City Hall and the city police force about all of that. So there might be some legitimate, just logistical concerns about getting there. There's also the fact that it's not on Parliament Hill this year and moved down to the Breton Flats. I don't think that's as big of an issue as just the fact that, do you really want to go in there and get stuck with a bunch of protesters? And maybe it's just easier to do something closer to home as opposed to it not being on the hill. I don't think that matters as much. I would never even get close to that. I would just stand back on Wellington Street. I like being out there. I don't like being out there as much as that and dealing with the security setup. So it'll be interesting to see how the week plays out. But I really think a lot of the noise is just that. It's just noise. And there's no way also that a protest can be as bad as it was in February, whenever that last one was. It just can't. The street's closed, so they can't go and park a bunch of people there and decide they're not leaving. And guess what? People are allowed to go out there and protest. I think it's ridiculous. Like, I look, if you're going downtown with an upside down flag and an F. Trudeau sign on Friday, I've pretty much made my mind up about what I think of your cause at this point. And I'll probably just roll my eyes and move on. But you're allowed to be there. Go knock yourself out. Go nuts. Be there for a couple of days. I don't see the strength in numbers that there was last time, and I just look at it and kind of roll my eyes, but it's there. You have the freedom to do it. And this area of closed roads in and around Parliament Hill, it's not that big. Like, it doesn't even stretch out to the Byward Market on the east side. Like, it's quite contained to those couple of streets in and around Parliament Hill up to, I guess, Sussex.
Yeah, the priority seems to be, like, we want to dissuade a direct repeat or an attempt at, like, a specific repeat.
Yeah, and that's why it can't be anywhere near as bad. So one of the things that people were worked up about on the weekend was the Conservative leader, Candace Bergen, saying that she wasn't going to stop MPs from going to any of these freedom-type protests. And people were like, can you believe this? No, actually, I kind of like that idea. I kind of like the fact that you just wear it on your sleeve. Go to whatever protest you want as a public official. Own it. And if your constituents agree with your point of view, they'll vote for you. If they don't, they don't. But at least you'll know where they stand on these issues. So I don't really have a problem with any of that. So that's kind of how the week is starting to shape up. And that's one of the issues I guess we'll focus on throughout this week. And I just, all I could think of when I saw all those flags was, despite all the noise, the average person is just going to be wearing red, putting a flag up somewhere and being happy to live here. So let's not lose track of that throughout the year. The cost of everything, totally just outrageous, right? Over the last couple of years, and inflation numbers out last week at a 39-year high, highest it's been since 1983. And one of the things CTV talked about this weekend was distress centers, saying that the amount of calls they've gotten for help because of money concerns has gone way up. Like, that can be an overwhelming thing if you're struggling to make ends meet, and it's not just in people's heads. Apparently the data is there to support the fact that it's a bit heavier. Rachel Wilson, the executive director of the Ottawa Food Bank, says monthly use has gone up about 25%.
And we know more people are coming more often. So they are going hungrier. They are coming more often to a food bank in Ottawa to access the food that they need.
Leslie Scott with the Distress Center of Ottawa says the calls of people worried about money have really gone up.
Lots of concerns over food, gas, worries about their children and how they're going to provide for them. And I don't see it getting any slower in terms of these conversations for quite some time.
So I don't know what you do with that information other than just acknowledging it, because we're all kind of feeling the pinch of it, right? You're like, your life is your life. And if interest rates go up on your variable mortgage just because you've got a big place doesn't mean you can't meet that budget, or just the fact that the cost of everything goes up. Like, even just our latest trip to the grocery store, you just look around and you go, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I'm buying groceries for one person, and even I'm still getting surprised. Like, every time I go, you're just like, oh, this much money, like $80 or whatever, doesn't go as far as it did.
No,
like 6 months ago.
It doesn't. Like, and like, you know, like I said, your situation is your situation. After the show today, at some point, I'm going out and stocking up on newborn baby diapers.
Yeah.
And formula, because we're at a point now where it's like, okay, this could be
imminent.
Imminent. I don't think it's super imminent, but it, like, we're week to week now.
Right.
And there's no point in putting it off. I didn't want to go earlier though, Corey, because I didn't want to be the guy going shopping for formula that I didn't quite need yet when everyone was freaking out about the baby formula.
Right, when people
shortage.
Needed it,
right?
Like, really urgently.
Yeah.
And then you're
so
like,
I just figured,
I'll need this in about 2 months. You're looking at a watch.
If you actually need it to feed your kid today, I just don't want to be caught short at
right.
all. Now I'm at a point where it's like, yeah, when we get back from the hospital, we need to have a few cans out here. So
I think you've waited long enough. You've threaded the needle.
It's time now. And then we, realized don't need diapers, but just. Expenses are what they are, and the cost of everything is going up. That's my whole point, and we're all feeling it, just to different levels. And the amount of people in this country that live paycheck to paycheck is shockingly high. And for those people, inflation rates that don't they may peak, but it's not going to shoot down anytime soon. So. Just interesting to see that this weekend on CTV, and kind of scary, all things considered. 6:17, it's the Morning Rush.
It's been 58 business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
All right, the passport drama continues for so many of us. 12 weeks since we applied for my daughter's passport. I'm counting it from the day I dropped the application in the mailbox. That doesn't include, and Corey Price is here producing this week, and you kind of reminded me of something. You were saying there were people complaining about just the process to actually go and apply is a bit of a nightmare. Like, there's a wait involved in that as well. And for me, it was trying to find just any kind of information. You go there, there's a massive line of people, and I just stood in the line for a bit and then realized, no, this is where you... For people who have an appointment.
Yeah, this is the people who already knew this was a disaster
and
could plan for
it. Oh, you
it.
Need an appointment? Go scan that QR code, fill out the form. We'll call you in like a week. And in that week, I just read, it's easier to just drop it in the mailbox. I don't know if it's easier or not, because 12 weeks have gone by. Is that easier? But don't you worry. The Prime Minister announced a new task force on the weekend. Special task force to help deal with the major delays in immigration and passport applications. 10 cabinet ministers are spearheading a new committee to review how services are delivered. This is such a government response to anything, right?
It's unbelievable, because it's one of those things, like, I think you might have said this off mic, but this is one minister's job.
No, I said it on air.
You said it on air?
Yeah, it was, there's one minister in charge of passports. They can't do their job, and now you're getting 10 to chair a committee?
We need a brain trust.
Why? Get rid of that minister that can't do their job. Put another one in there that can figure it out. This is ridiculous.
Well, and then the solution is, we're going to take their time away from the file that they're actually on, risk that those now get bungled by wasting everybody's time.
But it's such a government response to everything, though, right? Listen, we've got people around the country who can't, and I know that's a first world problem, right? Can't travel. But you are entitled to get government ID in a prompt manner. That's not some ridiculous thing. That's what this comes down to.
Yeah.
Leave all the travel aside. That's what it comes down to. Your access to government ID has been pushed super long because of total incompetence. You should have been able to see all of this coming. And the lines at passports offices throughout the country are totally ridiculous. People have discovered small town Service Canada offices.
That's the inside line.
Good place to go if you don't have travel actually booked. And the other thing is, I don't really have any trust that the ID I dropped in to the mail is going to come back. I'm like, well, this is probably gone. I'm going to have to go apply for a new birth certificate once this whole ordeal is
Maybe
over.
That's the next backlog. We'll have to see.
But yeah, 10 cabinet ministers chairing up some committee that's going to monitor external issues like labor shortages around the world, which contributing to travel delays, blah, blah, blah. One cabinet minister is incompetent, so they're hiring 9 other ones to chair up a task force. That's where we're at right now with the passport update, and hopefully I'll have better news for you tomorrow when it comes to what you're dealing with. But how long has it been? Like, it's just been stupid long. That's all we've got to... I've lost track.
It's been 58 business days since Daisy ordered her passport. Oh. Bill's best binges.
I'm already cooked.
What will you be watching?
All right. Obviously, Bill's off. Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll in the Morning Rush. And so we'll... the whole team will tell you what we're watching. Corey Price is here producing. Steve Bunda, our technical producer. And I'll start off. And I'm just going to get this one out of the way quickly. I'm kind of ashamed. I'm
you got to own this. Ashamed. You got to own it, man.
The OC dropped on Amazon Prime on Friday. All 4 seasons. 19 years ago this year, it aired on Fox, and it's on Amazon Prime. And I forgot forgot just how much that show was my guilty pleasure. And turns out it is again. So I watched a bit of that. That's not my binge-watching suggestion. That's just to tell you, if you didn't know, all episodes streaming on Amazon Prime. I saw an ad, I think, on my Instagram, or a sponsored ad on social media.
Oh, like saying, hey, you can go watch The OC.
The OC's on Amazon Prime. And I actually didn't believe it, so I went and checked the app, and sure enough, it was.
Why would somebody fake that?
I don't know.
Oh, man. You were saying the Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup, what, for the first time in 21 years?
Yeah.
Made you feel old. But the 19 years for the OC.
I know.
Is that not even worse?
It might be. It might be. It came out in the fall of 2003, or late summer 2003.
Good year. I was 6.
And, yeah, so it's probably... I know you know what it is, but wouldn't have been on your radar.
No, I've never seen it, but I'm like passingly familiar with the OC.
Yeah, it was a massive cultural phenomenon 20 years ago, or 19 years ago, I guess, and there it is. So anyway, just get that out of the way. And this next one isn't great for quality. I've actually decided my next show is going to be the one that Bill was suggesting last week, which is The Offer, which is kind of the making or how the Godfather mm-hmm. movie got made. I realized that I need another subscription, as if I don't have enough.
Which one's that?
To watch that. It's on Paramount Plus. I went to find it. That was exactly my reaction. I went to find it. Like, you get a free week, and then it's, I think, $6 a month.
A free week seems stingy. Like, give me a month.
Well, that's the thing. It's 10 episodes. I don't think I can squeeze them all into the free week, but that is my next show that I'm going to start this week, because I've heard great things about it. It looks great. But this one I binged this week. It's a quick one. It's not incredible, but I'll tell you about it in a second after we play the clip. It's called The Pentaveret.
In 1347, 5 learned men realized that the Black Plague was caused by fleas on rats. However, the church believed the plague to be God's punishment, labeling these 5 men heretics. So they formed a benevolent secret society to influence world events, known as The Pentaveret.
The Pentaveret?
Yeah, I think sometimes, even if a show's stupid, if it makes you laugh, to me, that's a win. And this one did make me laugh. It's 6 episodes. It's on Netflix. Mike Myers plays several characters in this show. Like, when I say several, I mean 6 or 7 characters.
Yeah, classic
are
Mike Myers.
Played by Mike Myers, which, I mean, you've seen him do that in other movies, right? But he plays, the first guy he plays is a TV news reporter from Toronto, who,
speaking right to our heart,
is sort of past his best before date, and he gets sent into the special projects category, right? He used to be the go-to reporter on the news. Now he's kind of just doing special projects, and they go to lay him off, and he realizes, if I can just get this one story, it might save my job. He's covering the Canadian Conspiracy Convention, Conspiracy Theory Convention, or CanConCon, as they call it on the show. And he finds out about the Pentaveret, which is the secret society of 5 people who actually really control the world in the U.S. And this guy's going to take him to their New York office. And this was a guy you'd probably find at the trucker convoy, who's all in on conspiracy theories, lives in his van, and he drives Mike Myers and the other reporter that he lives with, or that he's working with, down to New York to go see the Pentaveret. And turns out the Pentaveret, four of the five people are played by Mike Myers.
Sure.
And the fifth one was played by Mike Myers and died, and he was replaced by Keegan-Michael Kay, who's hilarious and fantastic. And anyway, it's only six episodes on Netflix, and it's as dumb as it sounds throughout that with Mike Myers playing all the characters, but it does make you laugh throughout. So if you want something that's light, it's only six half-hour episodes, so it's a quick watch on Netflix, and something that'll make you laugh, The Pentaveret. Bunda, what do you got?
Boys, so this weekend came out the final season. I'm not sure if you've seen, but on Netflix, there's a series called Animal Kingdom. It's been out on live TV as well, but it just aired season six, episode one. It's the season finale last night at 9. So this weekend, I kind of wanted to make sure I got caught up. But I realized something stupid that I did this weekend. So last time I watched this was, I guess, during the pandemic a couple of years ago. But I thought I was up to date. I was making sure I was watching. Mm. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go rewatch season five to make sure, you know, I just kind of get caught up for season six that aired last night. I'll watch today at some point, to only realize I never watched season five.
Uh-oh.
And so for Animal Kingdom, anyone that hasn't watched it, Animal Kingdom is a series based around a family that does a lot of crime jobs. It's a pretty cool series.
It's a pretty good show, isn't it?
Yeah, I wasn't sure about it, but a lot of people recommended it as like kind of action-based. There's a lot going on. It's very intense. So I watched, the first season, and I'll play the trailer for you here now from season one, just to kind of have some people get a little glimpse into it.
You remember your uncles, don't you, Jay?
Hey. Kid seems fine, but it's not a great time to have him around.
What's the matter, my baby boy? Are you afraid he's going to get more attention than you? You're in this family now. You're going to be seeing things, hearing things that need to stay in this family.
We do all the work. She controls the cash.
My boys know their limits.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's based around a family, and you know, you hear there's a voice of an older lady in there, and she's kind of the ringleader, the mom slash I guess grandmother in the situation, as she introduces her nephew or grandson into this family that has three brothers that are already very much into the crime and kind of doing these jobs where they're robbing places and whatnot for jewelry, money. And it's just very intense. It's got a very big storyline. Like I said, season six is the final season. It's airing right now on TV. The first four seasons are on Netflix right now to watch if you want to start binging that.
First five seasons.
The fifth season I did not. I don't know if it has been updated onto Netflix.
So where do you find that one?
You could find that on a website somewhere.
Gotcha. Okay, fair enough. We'll watch the first four and then we'll just wait.
Yeah, season five. Well, usually the way Netflix
patience is a virtue.
Yeah, Netflix usually releases that last season as a new. So I assume it's going to be uploaded within the next couple weeks. Is season five and season six, like I said, is airing on TV right now.
Don't you get excited though when you realize that you weren't quite done something? You got a few extra episodes that you. So I did that with Better Call Saul recently.
Yes,
I just thought like the third or fourth last episode was the finale for whatever reason. Just the way it ended made me think I was done. And I was going to watch the new season, and I realized, no, you still got a couple episodes from that last one.
Yeah.
There's a great show that I need some time to get caught up, and then that'll be a future binge watch. I've done it before with new seasons, but
that's my right now while I'm watching as well. But they're in the mid-season break of their season finale, which it's better than Breaking Bad for any Breaking Bad fans, but Better Call Saul. I'll piggyback down with you, Matt.
Fantastic. All right, Corey, quickly here. We don't have a clip for you, but we need one more.
I figured mine didn't really need a huge introduction, but a little while ago, one of my roommates started watching Star Trek The Next Generation from the beginning, and I sort of waltzed my way into the living room as that was happening and sat down, took some of it in. Star Trek was something that I would see a lot because my mom would watch it a lot, but I was never really like sitting down to enjoy it much for myself. So we've probably made it now through the first like 14 or so over the last little while. I don't watch a ton of TV, so it's been more of a process.
Will I be having to drive you to Comic-Con this year?
I think I could probably make it my own way. I won't drag you into it. But I got to say, it's not the greatest. I have been told that the first season of that show is a little bit rough around the edges, but I'm having a really good time watching some Star Trek. So if you're looking for something reliable, I guess, because, you know, people always check that out. There you go.
You can't go wrong with the old shows. There you go. The Morning Rush. Good morning.
Morning, Doctor. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, Matt. How are you?
I'm doing well. Okay, this came out last week, this study, and we didn't get to it with you, so I thought it'd be a good chance to do it today. Women have a higher chance of developing long COVID than men, according to a study that was released last week in the Current Medical Research and Opinion. Is there something to this, or was it just coincidence, or was there actually some biological reason that women were more likely to get long COVID than men?
Well, there might be something to it. The problem with the study is that it really doesn't provide much in terms of a conclusion. And the reason is that it was a study of studies, and it was very limited in terms of the number of studies they could gather to look at differences between men and women with respect to the symptoms of long COVID. You know, they found in men that they tended to have more diabetes and endocrine problems, whereas women had neurological problems, fatigue, difficulty focusing and concentrating. But the problem also was that although they studied over 1.3 million people out of these 35 studies, one of those studies constituted about 1.1 or 1.2 million, and the other 34 made up the other few hundred thousand. And in a lot of them, they didn't cover long COVID. Most of the people that were involved in the study did not have any vaccination, because the studies were done prior to vaccination in some situations. And so it's difficult to know what the outcome is going to be or would have been had everybody been vaccinated. That being said, there are in other disease states, so this would be, you know, in terms of precedent, it wouldn't be much of a precedent, that there are other disease states where women are affected more and other disease states where men are affected more and the symptoms are different. And so it is very possible to see this happen. But as the authors noted in their study, there are significant limitations to their study because of the availability of the data, that much of it did not separate women and men and just reported things globally. So we still have to look at what happens in the future and also look at people who are vaccinated and not vaccinated. But there's nothing surprising if there are differences between the two sexes.
We're a couple of years into this now. Long COVID, is it something that's being treated at your level, at a family doctor level, or are there these cases that are so bad that are there specialists for long COVID this early in the game?
So there are now various clinics that have been set up, usually hospital based, to deal with long COVID syndrome. But the problem is that there is no treatment. That's the problem. It's very difficult because the mechanisms that lead to the condition are still difficult to figure out. The thought is that this is an autoimmune condition, that is, the body's immune system has been overly activated by the disease itself and is still lingering. And as a result, it's attacking other parts of your body, including the brain. And as such, because we don't know what the mechanism is, how this actually occurs and why this occurs in some people and not in others, there's no specific treatment to stop it from happening. Sometimes it's self-limited, so it'll go on for a few months and disappear. And for others, I have some patients where this is happening, it's years where people that were involved in their jobs to do accounting, for example, can't even do math now because they just can't focus and concentrate. So it's a very real condition, very debilitating condition. Lots of emotional issues too because of the loss of function. So research is ongoing, and I'm certainly hopeful that they'll figure out why this is happening for some and not others. But right now, it's extremely difficult to find the right treatments to be able to help many people. And it is many people. You know, estimates are about 10 to 30% of people will suffer some form of long COVID after being infected. The question is why some people recover very quickly and within several months, and why others don't. And that's the big mystery and the conundrum.
Does it seem to just be totally random right now based on it affects this person, not this person? Like, have we seen any trends developing yet?
Well, they're looking for genetic basis for, and there's some studies that have come out that looked at the genetic basis for who gets more serious symptoms or illness with COVID. So that's starting. So the answer is partially, but it's still not set in stone, right? Still have a lot to go, a lot of road to go before we know exactly why some people are developing this and why some are not.
All right, and so does the vaccine help with long COVID? Do we know that yet? Because a lot of the people that you've talked about that have been you know, dealing with long COVID for a couple of years now, it wasn't that they were anti-vaxxers. They just wouldn't have been available to everyone in that first year, so they wouldn't have gotten it. But have we seen any sign that getting the vaccine maybe leads to limited long COVID symptoms?
Yes, that we've definitely seen. And the reason is that it seems to be related to how severe the disease is when someone contracts it. So when you have the vaccine, although you may get sick, you don't stay sick for too long. You aren't hospitalized. For the most part, your risk of ending up in hospital is very low. So it does seem to be related to the severity of the infection. Although, you know, people do have symptoms, they can have long COVID symptoms, but it doesn't seem to last as long. So you may be blunting the immune response too, because or the chance of the immune system to develop this autoimmune response because you don't have the illness for as long. So your body isn't primed as much. And so, you know, Bill was saying that he had difficulty focusing and concentrating while he had the illness, but now he's getting better.
Right.
He's vaccinated. So that you tend to see, you know, you have to look at larger aggregate data. You have to look at many more people. But the overall view is that, yes, if you are vaccinated, the chances of long COVID are less, but it's still potentially there. So, you know, that's the unfortunate consequence of this illness.
I was surprised as we talk about the vaccine, and in our house, the obvious conversation goes to vaccines for young kids, right? Having a child that's 18 months. And I'm surprised by the amount of parents who just say they don't want to get the vaccine for their kids because they don't think it's a big deal. And you can make your own decisions for your family. That is what it is. But my rationale there has just been, even if it is a low risk, I don't want to be that one person, right? I mean, it just, to me, doesn't seem like a chance worth taking to just go in and get a needle.
Yeah, you have to look. I think one of the arguments for the vaccination is that we vaccinate children for a lot of infectious diseases now that, you know, for example, polio, where it was one out of every 100 children that contracted severe polio and ended up, you know, with paralysis. And you know, you see those pictures of the iron lungs where the children needed assistance to breathe. So you go, well, that's only 1%. Well, the problem was there were so many children getting infected with polio that it was overwhelming. And there was also other consequences. It wasn't just the paralysis or other things with regards to polio. And that goes for a lot of diseases where the disease itself is so devastating and that no child should really end up at that kind of risk. That the same thing goes for COVID, right? There have been a lot of children admitted to hospital. You just don't see the reports of that. It doesn't make the news as much. But it's on the same level as many other infectious diseases. So if we're vaccinating and we have no issue with regards to vaccinating children for diseases that now we really don't see very much of anymore because of vaccination, then similarly for COVID vaccine, it's the same deal, right? Your child likely is not going to be overly harmed by it. But if they are, then it's a very similar reaction you would have had your child contracted other diseases and say, why didn't I vaccinate them for that? Yeah. So that's sort of the way I look at it. I look at it the same way you do, Matt, is that although the risk is low, it's not zero. And no child should really have to go through that.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. Thanks for this, Doc. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're very welcome, Matt.
Medical Myth Busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin. You can listen to Sunday House Call Sunday afternoons at 3 on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll this week. He'll be back next week, and we're just riding out a short work week here because Friday is the holiday, and it was a nice summer weekend this past weekend. I'm not going to lie. I was verging on complaining about the heat. I was that guy. It's not the heat, it's the humidity guy. Because that was kind of gross. At times this weekend, especially actually of all things this morning. and it looks like it's much better. The temperature's dropped a few degrees, and it really rained hard a few hours ago, and the humidity sort of broke quite a bit after that. But it was a nice summer weekend, though, and to me it was like the kickoff of summer. And you look at the highs throughout the week, between 23 and 29 this week, a really nice weekend, it looks like. Canada Day on Friday, maybe not as much, but the weekend, some clouds, 29, 28 degrees next weekend. Not quite as warm as this past weekend, but very, very nice. And you just sort of knew this was going to happen when it gets really nice. You get some scary incidents when it comes to water safety. And this past weekend was no exception, although I think it could have been worse. There were paddlers in distress. There were jet skis that had crashed, but no real injuries to speak of. Four people on paddleboards were heading towards rapids on the Ottawa River in the West End. And the witnesses there, here's Michaela Richter, just explain what happened. And it looks like things got a bit tense there yesterday.
Boyfriend picked me up on the boat after work, and right when we were getting out of the harbor, we heard screams of help, and we saw four people on a paddleboard heading towards the rapids. We motored as fast as we could towards the rapids to try and grab them before they went over, but unfortunately they were too close to the rapids, so I immediately grabbed my phone, called 911.
I gave you two dates there. It happened on Saturday. She says everyone involved in the incident had safety gear.
Luckily, all four people were wearing life jackets, so that definitely aided in, like, the rescue of them.
Yeah, and that's probably a good idea to just keep them on no matter what. It can at times be a tough sell to get people to put their life jackets on. As someone who spent every summer outdoors, I get it, right? It's hot, doesn't look great.
It's a little dorky.
Paddleboards, total different conversation. I can see on boats, but my rule was always on things like paddleboards, canoes, kayaks, no matter what, I'm wearing it. I'm a really strong swimmer, but I don't want to be put in that situation because you never know. You hit your head, water's really cold, you just give up, you get a cramp, whatever it is. Life jacket's there, you just sort of lay around and it's all good. Fire crews were able to bring all four of those people to shore, though, no injuries. Barbara Byers, senior research officer with the Life Saving Society, says life jackets key factor in staying safe.
A life jacket is the most important thing you can do to prevent a drowning. We know in looking at the drowning statistics that 80% of people who drowned did not have a life jacket on.
It looks like at our house, we're at the stage where we're just buying new life jackets every year. So bought this year's life jacket on the weekend. So anyone wants to invite us out. No, it's hoping to just do some beach trips this week. And we thought about doing it last week, looked at the life jacket, it didn't quite fit. I'm like, we need to go buy a new one before we go out there. So I don't even really want to walk near the sand with a kid that I end up chasing up the hallway at home every day, 10 times a day.
Yeah.
10 times an hour. But we don't need to be walking near the water without a life jacket.
Yeah.
So,
'cause she's on the move.
You just lose sight of her completely. But just a good reminder there out about wearing life jackets, or just kind of be on alert. Like, she's just sitting there minding her business, and all of a sudden a bunch of people are yelling help, which is not anything you want to be dealing with in any situation, let alone in the water where you see the rapids there. You see them going towards the rapids. You're like, if I jump in to help you, I'm not going to be able to do anything. But fire department got there quickly, and everyone seems to be okay. 7:15 in the morning rush.
Something good.
Tell me something good.
Powered by Desjardins Good Spark Grants. Recently, Desjardins awarded $3 million in Desjardins Good Spark Grants to 150 Canadian small business owners.
Tell me something good.
See more at goodsparkgrants.ca.
A lot of negativity floating around, so we'll start the week with something good here, and Corey Price producing the show all week, so you've brought something to the table, a nice good news story to put us all in a better place here.
Yeah, this was just a really cute gesture from the end of last week, because, you know, the school years are wrapping up for elementary and high school students. We're getting into the summer break, and at Barrhaven Public School, Trent Taniguchi is the principal, and he's going to be leaving the school as of the end of this year. And they just gave him a very nice send-off that started getting some traction on Twitter, and I thought that people might just appreciate. So they went and they counted, and they found out that he has worked 2,628,000 minutes at that school.
Jeez.
And so they took that, and they made this whole presentation. There's a whole song number. They've got the whole school involved. I'm going to play a clip of the song and then see if you can recognize what they're riffing on, and if you can, I'll explain.
2,628,000 minutes. We actually sat down and did the math. 2,628,000 minutes.
That's how many minutes that you have worked here. Wow.
I mean, they won't be on the cast of Rent anytime soon, but no. It's not. I like the sentiment.
It's
cute.
Yeah.
Right.
If you don't know the song, the original song they're riffing on is Seasons of Love from Rent, the musical. And so, yeah, but there's this whole video and they go through the whole school and all the staffs involved. And then at the end, of course, you know, it's an elementary school. You got to wrangle the kids out there. So you go through the halls of the school and you get out to the yard and there's a whole crowd of people ready to greet them. People have custom made T-shirts on marking the amount of time that he's worked there. And then there's just a send off with the kids outside.
All right, it's the end of the school year. Yeah. Nice little send-off for the guy. Hope he enjoys wherever he's going next, retirement, new job, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just
a nice feel-good little
not easy
for
to
everybody.
Rile up that many kids to come
no,
together.
No, that was some
like
wrangling,
that.
I have no doubt in my mind.
And it's the best time of year, though, when you're a kid that age.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you could get me to sing just about anything.
If it meant that the school
age,
year
if
was
it meant
ending.
The school year was done.
Yeah.
And the kids in my neighborhood, so I live fairly close to a school and was just out there on, I think the last day was Thursday. I forget which day it was last week, but they were pumped. And one of the schools that I drive by on my way home on Friday, I guess exams were done or whatever it was, but they didn't even try to go to class that day. You know, it was after the show, 9:45, whatever it was.
Everybody's outside.
And the whole school is just outside on the front steps. So it's an exciting time. That was the best time as a kid to me, was like the excitement of that last few days.
Yeah.
And then just summer is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, get on your bike and spend every day outside. Fantastic. So anyway, good for them. We should tell you, though, about the Desjardins Good Sparks grant. I'm going to let you just take the lead on that one.
Yeah, you got it. Congratulations to the 150 small business owners who each received a $20,000 Desjardins Good Spark grant. See more at goodsparkgrants.ca.
All right, so 7:23, it's the Morning Rush, and the Supreme Court decision in the United States, Roe v. Wade, to overturn it came down on Friday, and as you can imagine, it had a lot of spillover here north of the border, and I know a lot of people tempted to roll their eyes at our prime minister coming out and speaking about it, about how tough of a day it was. But I watched something like that with the prime minister on Friday, and like it or not, American politics creeps up north of the border, and I just thought, you know, he tries to make American issues into Canadian ones, and that frustrates a lot of people. But you just need to recognize it and adapt to that, because he plays into a real anger that was there in the under 40 crowd on social media that would vote for the Liberals, right? He played right into that, and I think he does that well. And that frustrates some people, and some people don't like to say that. But I just thought he did, right? He struck all the right tones for people who were very passionate about the abortion issue in favor of being pro-choice. And he just hit all those chords. And that frustrates the opposition parties in this country, I realize. But they need to find some kind of way to adapt to that isn't just getting up yelling and screaming about how this is a different country's issue. Because that doesn't hit the right tone with the people who are voting for that. And listen, I mean, everyone's had their say on this issue over the last 3 days. You don't need to come in here and hear my stance. It's a complicated issue, and I understand that. But I just thought the political reaction to that over the weekend in this country was very interesting, right? I saw a lot of posts on social media about the MPs who are pro-life and trying to name them, and people were sharing those names out on social media. You never want to take an American issue and thrust it into, like, it's not like we have an election by any means, but there was a lot of political awareness about this over the weekend, and I don't know how that translates in the future in Canadian politics. Maybe it's not something that's thought about even a week from now, 2 weeks from now. But it doesn't look like that issue is going away anywhere south of the border, and they tend to rear their head here, despite the fact that our laws haven't changed and things are still going strong here. There is a way that these issues creep into either election campaigns or just the public consciousness at a time. And after hearing them on those issues, I'm not the biggest fan of our prime minister, but after hearing him on those issues on the weekend, I just thought, whoever's running against that guy in the next election, if he runs again, because I'm not convinced that he will, needs to figure out a way to counter this, because the way you counter it can't be to seem angry at the fact that he's bringing up the issue, or even just ignoring it completely. I don't think works either. And say what you want about the prime minister, but he's very smart politically. And so when I was watching his comments on Friday, right? I mean, he almost just looked like somebody had died. Like he was that solemn at a moment. I just saw it shared constantly on social media over the weekend. And I thought, he's tapping into something here with people who are likely to vote Liberals. And I don't know how you counter that. Does the same thing on gun control. It drives people who are opposition to him nuts that he does it. And I'm like, he handles those issues very well. And maybe they shouldn't be campaign dominating issues north of the border when these issues haven't been discussed or really debated in a long time here, right? Our laws are what they are, and I don't see them changing anytime soon, but he has a way of playing into that and riling up progressives in a way that you need. If you want to beat this guy again, you need to find a way to counter that. And it's just something interesting with a conservative leadership race hanging over in the next few months. I don't know how you counter that. Because you stay silent on the issue, people think you have some kind of hidden agenda. You come out in support, and then you've got an angry base. Like, it's a tough one, right? And I just watched the way he handled that on the weekend. I'm like, that's why. And I always make this joke, and it's partly rooted in truth. I'm like, that's why he's going to be prime minister forever. Because the people who oppose him have no real way to counter that without looking like they're radical, I guess is the word, or that they're hiding something. He's found a way to just kind of corner that issue. And it didn't take long after the Supreme Court announced its decision on Friday for him to come out and make that statement, and then for it to go viral and to be part of the conversation here in this country. And I can already see the hate mail coming in when I say that. It's an issue that he has championed and plays well with a base that is already motivated to go out and vote for him. And I don't know how you counter that. Just something to keep in mind as we go through the conservative election, leadership election in the next few months. And maybe it's an issue that doesn't come up in the next couple of years, but I don't see that as happening. It's going to be kind of front and center south of the border. And issues in the U.S. tend to creep into Canadian politics. And it'll be very fascinating to see how that plays out. 729 is the Morning Rush. And if you can't be next
to me, your memory's ecstasy. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Matt Harris in for Bill Carroll this week. He'll be back next Monday. He's off all week. Over the weekend, the New York Times reported that Canadian special forces were operating in Ukraine. They were part of NATO country commandos, including Britain, France, and Lithuania, who were working in Ukraine to, among other things, do some training missions. CTV military analyst David Fraser is on the line, former NATO commander and president of Aegis Six Corporation. Good morning. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Matt, good to be with you.
Did this surprise you when it came out? I know CTV and Global, I believe it was, earlier in the year had reported that there were some special forces on the ground. So when you saw that, what was your initial reaction?
Well, a little bit disbelieving because, you know, as soon as you put NATO troops on the ground, that just elevates the dialogue with Russia to a whole new level. So I think we should go back to the minister and scrutinize that because I don't think there's any NATO leader that wants to jeopardize and expand this war any further. You know, would they be back in NATO territory doing training? I would see that. But actually in the country itself doing training, that would be a bit of a stretch.
And would this story being published cause any security concerns for the people that are there on the ground?
Well, the special forces, but at the same time, this is more of a political article than it is at, you know, what are they actually doing? I mean,
right.
You know, we shouldn't be surprised that they're training, you know, this high tech stuff.
We'll have to throw you on hold there, David, and deal with the phone issue. If we do get him back, just let me know there. So, yeah, the story came out on the weekend that the Canadian forces were there and came as a bit of a surprise to people that were there on the ground. How ready are we for anything that goes on? David, we got you back there. Sorry about that. It was just getting a bit hard to hear you there, but I'll let you continue your point.
Yeah, so I would just say that, you know, the security aspect, we don't talk about what they do. They probably are training, but not in the country, because we don't want this to turn into a political issue, which would indicate for Putin that NATO is actually on the ground and supporting Ukraine, which expands the war. And that's not what anybody wants.
No, and then you risk some form of retaliation, I suppose, if that gets out there.
Yeah, exactly, because now, you know, the Russian people, you know, Putin will say, look, we're not just fighting Ukraine, we're fighting all of NATO. And now you get the Russian people going behind Putin, and this, again, is a political domino effect we don't want. We want to contain this conflict inside where it is right now, as much as it's distasteful. We've got to just try to help Ukraine defeat the Russians with whatever we can give them.
Yeah, we don't want to be sending more boots on the ground, right? Like that would really escalate things to a point of probably no return.
It would certainly escalate it to the point where this is going to be a long war. It will just make it longer and will turn it into a world war. And I don't think any leader at the G7 wants that.
So as you've been kind of analyzing what's been going on there, what's your read on the current situation? I mean, months ago when we first started talking, I don't think a lot of people saw this as playing out just this long, but the Ukrainian military gave up quite the fight there. But what's your analysis of the situation on the ground right now from over here?
Well, Matt, you hit the nail on the head. This is a war of surprise. Nobody ever thought the Ukrainians would give the Russians this much of a go for their money. Nobody thought the Russians would have been this poorly able to do anything. And you know, nobody thought it was going to be last as long as it is. And yes, and so right now what's happening on the ground, the Russians have gotten some gains in the Donbass area. Severodonetsk has been given up by the Ukrainians, probably rightly so they can save their forces. But what we need to do with the Ukrainians today is give them a lot more artillery, give them air defense assets, give them drones that are capable of strike, and so they can slow down and stop the Russian advance and then turn it around and push it back.
Is there a concern when you send weapons that they end up in the wrong hands? How does a foreign government mitigate against that? Are there steps that can be taken to make sure if you're sending weapons over to a war zone that they don't end up in the wrong hands? There's a risk associated there.
There's always a risk, and this is war. You can't control what happens. It's like water on a table.
Right.
But at the same time, we are giving it to a responsible government that, you know, they are pushing it against, you know, an irresponsible government called Russia. And if we don't do this, the consequences of not doing it are worse than the consequences of, you know, a couple of weapons getting into the wrong hands.
All these massive sanctions that were put against the Russian government and the Russian people, the Russian oligarchs and stuff like that, are we seeing the effects of those months later?
We saw them at the beginning. I'm not sure we're seeing them now, as illustrated by the Russian shelling and using missiles into Kyiv yesterday. I think the Russians are thumbing their nose at the West because the Russia is still getting exorbitant money from their oil sales. They don't seem to be too concerned what the impact of the sanctions is on the Russian people, notwithstanding with all the country, all the companies in the world have done by pulling out of there. I think this is now a time for hard decisions to really go after Russia with more economic sanctions. We've stopped gold trade, but we've got to do an awful lot more to get Putin's attention and put the squeeze on him, so that push him to the table to negotiate an end to this conflict.
Do you think we'll see that soon?
No. With this, unfortunately, nothing happens that fast. Either the sanctions or the military actions on the ground, what we're seeing here is going to be a long, drawn-out blood affair that's just going to kill young soldiers on both sides for some time.
I guess that's just the stark reality of the situation, but it's just sad all around. David, thanks for your time this morning.
Matt, thank you.
Retired Major General David Fraser, president of Aegis Six Corporation, former NATO commander and the CTV military analyst on the situation going on there, sparked by the New York Times report this morning that many NATO countries, including Canada, had special forces inside Ukraine. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Trending. Trending today with Matt Harris.
The Morning Rush, Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll, and that means Corey Price is here to take a look at what's trending, and you tell me you're going international today.
Yeah, you know, there's been a big meeting going on. It's continuing today. The G7 is ongoing. Everybody's favorite Canadian politician, Justin Trudeau, is there, as as we talked about earlier. But so there is a clip that went very viral recently of Boris Johnson and Justin Trudeau riffing with each other around the G7 meeting table, and a few other leaders do get in on it with bits and pieces, but it's them doing the bulk of the work, making fun of Vladimir Putin in a very like sort of high school kind of way, like making fun of the way he sort of like was this tough guy persona kind of thing. So what we can do is just, if you haven't heard it, pardon the audio quality is not as great as you would want. because they're in a big room and there's a lot of people talking, but you can make it out and we'll just, you know, you can get a feel for it for yourself. But yeah, people, some people unhappy with the way they've decided to come at him here. So let's give that a quick listen.
All right. So that was hard to hear. I got Trudeau saying bare chest and horseback riding, and Boris Johnson saying something about a shirt, but just give me what we missed there.
Yeah, so the gist of what they're talking about is sort of they're making fun of that like tough guy, like you said, shirtless horseback riding, tongue twister for you, where you know, Boris Johnson starts by asking like, oh, is it jackets on or jackets off for the picture, and then they're joking about like, at the end you hear Justin Trudeau joke about like, oh yeah, we'll have pecs out, and you know, having this sort of like, you know, we got to look tougher than he does, like all joking.
He's got his shirt off horseback.
Yeah, and the horseback, right? Okay. Like, that's the gist of the bit. It is a little muffled there. If you go online, there's like subtitled versions of the video if you're very curious. But
no, but here's what kind of frustrates me. And I know earlier in the morning, I was actually saying that I thought he handled the Roe v. Wade incident really well, mm-hmm. and that showed kind of his strength. This shows every part of his weakness. Like, we just talked to retired Major General David Fraser and about just how many more people are going to die in Ukraine at the hands of this brutal leader. And standing up there, just kind of laughing about the whole situation and the shirt off, horseback riding, pecs. It's just not a good situation. I don't need you kind of making light of what's going on here. Well, there are a ton of people dying in a war that we've got going on. So when I said you kind of see the best of him, as frustrating as he is as a politician on Friday, then a day later, you see the worst of him and you realize, oh, here we go. Like, this is what we're dealing with. I'm not jumping up and down screaming about it like some people have been.
No, online. I don't think it plays great for any
of
them. No,
it's just inappropriate, and it looks like a bunch of out of touch people not taking seriously the fact that people are being killed by this man, right? Just the jokes about the horseback ride. We've all seen the pictures. I don't find the Putin memes funny. You know, we've talked about this before. That hockey game he plays with Russian players every year, and he scores 12 goals, and people always go and make fun of him. I don't find it funny because I think they're all afraid of him. And it was just a total lack of leadership around that table in that moment for no one to just stand up and just say, guys, we're talking about a terrible leader who's just killing a bunch of people. Maybe we don't need to be laughing about the shirt off picks. Is it the end of the world? No, but you just want someone around that table to stand up there and just say, guys, this wasn't okay.
Yeah, it sounds more like a bit that, you know, just...
It sounds like a Saturday Night Live bit.
Or an everyday person might do, but you just... It does seem weird having it come from the people ostensibly in charge. Like,
different from Steve that works at the bank.
Right.
Who has no control over what's going on. It's like, you know, you guys are the most powerful people in the world. That's why you're at this meeting.
It is weird to,
you
like...
You can do something about
commit
it.
$50 million to saving Ukrainian grain and then in the same meeting have done the bit.
Just be poking fun. But you're right, it's everywhere, and I'm glad we got to play it. Just another disappointing moment that probably shouldn't really surprise us here. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
There was a time somewhere in the last few months where we were waiting on a passport, and I thought I was the only one that was waiting for a long time. And then the media story started. For us, it's been well over 12 weeks now of waiting for a passport.
It's been 58 business days since Daisy ordered her passport.
But we got movement on it this weekend. The Prime Minister announced a task force. One cabinet minister can't do the job properly, so now we're going to get 10 on a task force to figure it out. And Brian Lilly's been kind of on the passport story for a while for us, and he's, you know, it's usually he's on Fridays. He's off this Friday, and we figured, well, we'll get him up on Monday then. Good morning, Brian.
You're just trying to get value for money from me.
That's right. We are going to pay you the same today that we do every Friday. We're just going to give you your Friday money today instead. Oh, wait,
zero.
Zero.
Look, it's a bit bizarre considering that we have a committee to run government. It's called Cabinet. That's effectively what it is. It is a, you know, I think the legal terms are the Council of the Executive and so on, and that's why it's often called Government in Council. These are our counselors around the table to run the government. Each one of them is in charge of a department. And when it comes to passports and immigration, the ministers have been failing. Karina Gold is the minister in charge, but now she's also going to have with her the co-chairs of this new committee are Marcy Ian, Minister for Women and Gender Equality and Youth, also my MP, Mark Miller, the Minister of Crown Indigenous Relations. They're also going to be helped out by Randy Boisneau, the Minister for Tourism and Associate Finance Minister, Mona Forche, President of the Treasury Board. You'll remember her from such films as Phoenix. What's Phoenix? We can't pay you.
And as defining the middle class. Screams competence.
Because there's 10 of them. And the situation hasn't gotten better. And the minister continues to use throw around phrases such as unprecedented. And I really want the people who are questioning her to start challenging her and pushing back. The surge that she talks about is, you know, as of last week, it was 55% of their pre-pandemic normal for processing passport applications. They used to process between 90 and 98,000 a week. When they started saying it was a surge, it was because they were up to 54,000 a week. Yeah, it's a surge compared to COVID, where in the first year, I think they processed 300,000 in the entire first year of COVID. Since then, it's been growing steadily, and now it's up to between 50 and 60% of the pre-pandemic normal. That's not a surge. That's not unprecedented. That should not result in the mess-ups that we're seeing. And it's not because they fired a bunch of people. It's not due to vaccine mandates, meaning people can't work. It's not because people are laid off. These are all things the government has said. I'm not making anything up. I'm looking at the government figures and their official statements instead of just listening to a minister spin us.
Now, I did hear some, I think it was the Minister Gold, but somebody was asked about the figures. Maybe it was based on your reporting. I don't think they take your questions. So it must have been somebody else. And they were saying, yeah, but the difference this time is a lot of the applications are done by mail, whereas before they were done in person. And I only have my own experience to judge by that, but I went to do it in person. The line was so long, they said, well, you need an appointment. When I looked online, it just said it's easier to apply by mail if you don't need it anytime soon, because we don't have travel booked, right? We just get to sit there and watch government incompetence at work. But my point is, it wouldn't have been by mail if the passport office wasn't so insane when I went there. So yeah, something's not adding up here.
Yeah, or Service Canada, where the majority of Service Canada employees do still work from home. The majority of Passport Canada employees do not. They told me only 11% work from home, but you used to be able to go and at least start the process in a Service Canada office. If you live in Brockville or Cornwall, you don't have a passport office. Ottawa does, but these other communities don't. So you go to Service Canada if you want to do it in person. A lot of those people are still working from home. As far as this mail versus in person, whether it's mail or in person, they're still at less than 60%. So their argument is 80% is now by mail, and 25% of them have mistakes, and so it takes longer. Well, you're still well below what you should be at. It should not cause that much of a backup. So every time you knock something down, they come up with something new. Now they're claiming 85% of them, of the applications, are for brand new passports, kids like Daisy, or new Canadians. I guarantee you, Matt, that when the access to information requests are returned, where the order paper questions are returned in Parliament, that figure will be nowhere in them, because the government just keeps coming up with new ways to spin. This committee is the latest. This is an embarrassment. We shouldn't need this for passports. We shouldn't need it for immigration, which is the other one that that they're looking after, that they need to get a handle on. It's the immigration side. It's 4 years to get through just shy of 4 years to get a skilled tradesperson processed to come to Canada. Those are jobs. Those are people that could fill jobs that we have hundreds of thousands waiting for, and we can't get that done. You can't get through the airport to get out of Pearson. You can't get back in when you return to Canada.
It's just insane all around. It really is. But you know what, though, Brian? The good news is, as long as it's been for her passport application, as you know, we've been waiting 58 days now for a passport, they charged my credit card almost 2 months ago. So yeah, I don't have any communication from them. Things are good, but they got paid.
And the thing that you have to worry about is with the child's passport, like Daisy, you had to send in the original birth certificate.
Her birth certificate is in the mail.
I have been hearing from parents who, after waiting very long periods of time, just like you, have told me they haven't gotten their kid's birth certificate back, and there's no response, so they end up having to go back to the Ontario government to get it. I'm serious. And by the way, just so you know that this isn't across all levels of government, I'm down the street from a couple of Service Ontario locations, and they are not having these kinds of backups for renewing health cards, renewing driver's licenses. There was the backup for in-person driving tests. That got solved fairly quickly and has not been nearly as long as this passport issue has been there. Once they opened it up, it became an issue. That got resolved in a much more orderly way. Governments can return to work. The federal government just hasn't handled it properly. And instead of having a new committee, the minister in charge at the cabinet committee needs to actually crack the whip and do their job, demand answers from their department that isn't working.
You are on the show every Friday. As I'm saying that like you don't already know that you call in every Friday. But I just want to tell you something. So on Friday, June 17th, you were on. We were talking about the passport issue. You and Bill were. So we, after the show that day, I filled out the form for get an update on your passport. Right, you fill in your information. It says in 3 business days we'll get back to you with an update. Well, it's June 27th now, and haven't gotten that update yet.
Well, look, you can't count weekends. Oh, wait.
It's still 5, 6? Okay, I'll give them that first day, but today's day 6.
Yeah. These are unacceptable service levels. And unfortunately, there's too many people who are just willing to accept whatever governments do. Thankfully, not all Canadians, because Canadians have become upset. They have started to express their anger. I heard the interview that Evan did with one of the union representatives saying it's getting really tense. We're worried about safety. In Montreal, the police had to be called in for crowd control. These are signs that things aren't working. Stop spinning us. Get working.
Yeah, just fix it. Thanks for this, Brian. We'll talk to you sometime soon. And you're off Friday. Enjoy the long weekend. Enjoy Canada Day.
You as well. All the best. Bye.
Brian Lilly of Sun Media, he's been covering the passport story for a long time now. And don't worry, we've got a task force that's going to fix it. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
It's been 58 business days since Daisy ordered her passport. News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
All right, Judy in Barrhaven is on the line, going to try to win $1,000 here. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
You ready to play?
Yes.
All right, we will ask you 10 questions in a minute. Everyone you get right is $10. You get all 10. It's $1,000. Sound good to you?
All right, yes.
All right, let's start this here. We'll start the clock after I finish reading you the first question. Which day this week will the Canada Day road closures begin?
Wednesday.
How many people fell off paddleboards into the rapids in the Ottawa River this weekend?
4.
Barrhaven Public School sent their principal out with a remix of a song from which musical?
Seasons of Love.
Which meeting was Justin Trudeau and Boris Johnson at when they were making fun of Vladimir Putin?
Which meeting? G7.
Yeah. Ottawa Distress Center are getting more calls this day about people worried about what?
Finances. And food.
Okay, we did our binge watching segment this morning. Which show was Steve Bundo watching?
Animal Kingdom.
Name the player that won the Conn Smythe Trophy as playoff MVP in the NHL.
Kale McCarr.
Which holiday name do I struggle to say on air?
Canada Day.
Chris Holsky got a gift this weekend from his dad. What was it?
Oh, records.
How many business days has Daisy been waiting for her passport?
58.
Judy, you nailed every single one. We'll see if you got them all right. How do you feel?
I'm shaking.
You're a bit nervous, eh? All right.
I'm really shaking.
Okay, well, we'll see how you did here. Corey's going to take it over here.
So what day this week will Canada Day road closure start? You said Wednesday, that's right. How many people fell off paddleboards and into rapids over the weekend? You said 4, that's right. Barrhaven Public School sent off their principal with a remix of a song from what musical? You gave us the name of the song, which was Seasons of Love. That's right. But we were looking for the name of the musical, which is Rent. I'm not sure what we do there. That's it?
Yeah, I got to answer the questions.
Okay. Justin Trudeau and Boris Johnson made fun of Vladimir Putin at what meeting? You said the G7. That's right. Ottawa distress centers are getting more calls with people worried about what? You said finances. That's right. What show did Steve Bunda have to catch up on for his binge watching? You said Animal Kingdom. That's right. Name the player that won the Conn Smythe Trophy. You said Kale McCarr. That's right. Which holiday name does Matt struggle to say on air? Threw that one at him. You said Canada Day. That's right. Holsky recently received a gift, a collection of what from his dad? Vinyl records. That's right. And how many business days had Daisy been waiting for her passport? You said 58. That's right. For a 9 out of 10, $90
congrats,
haul.
Congrats, Judy. That's fantastic. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you.
It's the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. You know what we should have given her instead of $90? How about a suitcase with 1 million euros in it? So apparently, Prince Charles would just, from Qatari politicians, just get, it happened twice, according to a British newspaper report from the Sunday Times yesterday.
Yeah.
Where they would just hand him, once it was a shopping bag, the other time was a duffel bag with 1 million
just
euros.
Just full of money.
For his charity. Now, we have to be clear here and say, nobody's alleging that he did anything wrong. No one's alleging that, that it was illegal. It wasn't anything shady. It was just, that's how he got the money.
And what an image, right? Of just being handed like a briefcase or a duffel bag full of a million euro.
He says all proper tracking was done on the money. It's all good. But, and I get stressed out when I take out a couple hundred bucks in my wallet that I'll drop a bit.
Seriously.
Going on there. Unbelievable. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. We'll take a break when we come back. Some binge watching suggestions for the show. And we'll take your feedback on the inbox as well. Texas 580-580 because we'll give you the last word on the show. It's the Morning Rush.
Now, the inbox. Everybody's talking about on News Talk 580 CFRA.
There's a guy who texts every single day asking us to ask Dr. Barry Dworkin about sudden adult death syndrome, something that no one's been talking about since the COVID vaccine came into effect. And I want to try to take a lot of these seriously, but yeah, okay. There's a government conspiracy to hide the amount of people just dropping dead. Sure. Let's go with that. Here's one. The government needs to put in some overtime and take care of these pressing problems rather than taking 3 months, building a task force, and going into hiding based on the passport idea. Another one on passports. Angela, task force, why does Trudeau need this to tell him what's wrong? I can do it quite quickly. Poor decision-making, poor planning, poor execution. And on Putin, I agree with you that the West is afraid of him, and so the bully carries on. If the EU and NATO accepted Ukraine, maybe Russia would be afraid as well. Angela, I just didn't like all those G7 leaders just poking fun at Putin instead of someone just taking a stand and saying, you know what? Thousands of people are being killed over here. Maybe we shouldn't be joking about this situation and dealing with. But just don't be cracking jokes at it. It just didn't seem like the right time to be doing that. I don't want to be jumping up and down and yelling about it. That's not my point. I'm not, you know, life goes on. It just didn't seem to be a great thing to be doing there. A couple people during the Brian Lilly interview on passports asking if it had to do with government workers working from home. He gave a percentage of passport employees that are working from home that was fairly low, although the Service Canada employees, it was higher. I think that's definitely part about it. And there you go. And just quickly on binge watching, someone texted in, the Pentaveret was mentioned in So I Married an Axe Murderer starring Mike Myers, which you're right, I should have mentioned that when we were talking about it. They based the conspiracy off the one that came around in his movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer. And if you want to laugh, you can go in there and check that out. So it's 8:57. We'll obviously end the show here, take a break, and we'll find out together who we're waiting on as the host. Let's see. Who's it going to be today? Patricia Bull, CTV News, will be in here next. It's the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harris. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 5 a.m.